I've had so many epiphanies in my lifetime. And I kind of wondered if our president had one this week after making that comment that all African nations are basically those kind of nations. And then he went on to praise Elon Musk this week for shooting that rocket up into space. And of course, he is from South Africa, one of those places. Huh, it's an epiphany. What a difference a good epiphany can make. What a transformation can happen when finally we see what we have long wanted to know, and we can begin to move finally into those new directions, new possibilities with our lives. Have you ever seen the light in such a way that you just knew what you needed to do next? For many of us, the answer is yes, but not often enough. And most of the rest of us might say no, but life took off in new directions anyway, and we just sort of followed along. It's a delayed epiphany. In academic settings, such as we're surrounded often by here in Bloomington, it's my bias, that epiphanies are more rare. And graduation from a degree program or an endless array of putting off graduation are what those moments most look like. Well, you know, I had to graduate, but now I'm going off to get a job, I guess. Or I'll just stay ABD for a little while longer. I need more time to write before I take the risk of getting away from what is so secure, being a student. One of the most powerful realities about epiphanies and suddenly knowing what is going to happen is that they are so exciting, but also so demanding of us for new growth, new risk, new like everything. At least before that epiphany moment occurs, we knew what to do, how to focus our energy and how to focus our time, even if it involves not finishing something. This is the last Sunday of the church calendar year of the season of Epiphany. It's called Transfiguration Sunday, and we always have this story of Jesus going to the mountaintop, and there in a blaze of light and glory, fog and mist, fire and fury, clarity and confusion, Jesus is seen, so the story goes, for who he really is, the Christ, the long-awaited Messiah, the prophet in the likes of Elijah and Moses, and oh, by the way, in parallel fashion, so too are Peter, James, and John, seen as equals to Elijah and Moses. It's a story that is filled with wonder, with faith history, and just a ton of church politics. It is one of those unique stories that appear in all three of the main Gospels, Mark, Matthew, and Luke. That the same story, incidentally, appears in the Gospels is really more unique than not. I do not know a credible scholar that believes that the story actually happened in real time, and that most probably it is a resurrection narrative that got placed early into the developing narrative to make a point at that point in the gospel. Truthfully, it's a made-up event to tell us in vivid detail with showy optics and drama how the early developing church that followed Jesus, rather than traditional Judaism, understood itself as unique and going off in a new direction, following new prophets. It is saying that we value the faith tradition of Moses and Elijah, but now that we have Jesus as our Messiah, our center focus, now we have Peter, James, and John who are leading the way as the new faith expression that will eventually be called Christianity. It is a story that answers how Christianity really got going. It is the major pivot point, like when Luke Skywalker discovers who his daddy is. It's pretty important. Now, it's a rather insignificant point that I want to make that has nothing to do with anything I have said, I don't think. It's just one of those things I don't want to avoid it. So often in history, groups get tagged with a name that when first used is a derogatory term, and then history forgets the origins and the name persists, such as the term Christian, which was first used by the Romans as a derogatory reference. And so it was in England in the 1600s when those breakaway religious purists from the Anglican Church, the Pilgrims and others, began re-baptizing adults who had already been baptized as infants. Oh, God, those are the Baptists. We have a few of those here this morning. In like fashion, here in Indiana, gosh, we ponder. I hear all the time how we got our nickname, and yet we know. There's a liquor store over in Brown County. It's called Who's Your Daddy? Surely we must come to appreciate that we Hoosiers were referred to as those people moving to that new territory. They don't even know their daddy. I'm just saying, that's how it happened. More important than the improbable story of all those religious figures appearing on a mountaintop is the reality that the early followers of Jesus and contemporary followers today have moments in our lives when it suddenly becomes clear that the safety, the security, the stability that we know, the way we have been living, it is simply no longer adequate. And suddenly there is a moment where we turn from what we have been to what we can become. It's a confusing time, knowing that we need to change, but we do not know what that faithful future is probably going to look like. It's easier, at least for me, to stay in depression, to stay in what, addiction, to stay in a dead relationship, to repeat pattern after pattern, than to risk exploring what our lives could be if we remain steadfast in listening to the call of God in our lives to become more of what God is dreaming with us to be and do. And interestingly, I think not every pattern we have is a negative one that is holding us back. I suspect in our group of us here this morning, there are any number of us who have very positive patterns, successful patterns, patterns that have made us some money, that have given us security, that are all very societally and academically approved, that are holding us back from what we could risk. Faithfulness is surely about evolving with the reality of life toward increasing growth and development. The so-called good life that most of us here enjoy, that provides so much comfort and security, is probably just as detrimental to what we could be doing as any number of addictions and laziness. The good life that many of us have is just as addictive and unproductive. And we need to be about challenging ourselves with God as our partner to become more. Churches as organizations, we are no different. I read an article yesterday from the Pew Research Center that says last year there were upwards of 7,000 churches that closed their doors permanently. And it's interesting to read on that it's just not millennials who are not coming to church anymore. It's also their parents. You know, I feel toward church closings much like I do the stock market. We have been long overdue for corrections in our marketplaces. Churches have not been paying attention to the market demands. And what are those demands? Churches have been long losing people, good and sincere, faithful people, because we have simply not stayed up with the times. Having a rock praise band is not keeping up with the times. The largest megachurch pastors have said openly that trying to do church as professional entertainment has been a mistake. Not because there's something wrong with good entertainment, but that sort of faith community is more of a consumer product than a faith community where not only do we bond with one another, but where consistently we go out and serve those most in need. One of our tasks, us, this year, is to see the light being and to risk being in community with one another, to invite others into community, and to begin to seriously challenge the pseudo-commercial and digital communities that connect us like on with online gaming groups, with thousands at Starbucks who have really good coffee and scones. But then those groups are not with us through the highs and the lows and the middle ground days of our real lives. We need to be together. We need to eat together. Seriously reflect on the issues of our day. Serve those most in need and build a faith community that will survive because we have grown beyond magical thinking and have created a faith system that embraces the fullness of science and technology while being concerned not only for our own holistic healing and well-being, but also for all of the others that we share this fragile planet with. Faith communities are dying because we have too often failed to embrace and demand that our faith statements align with climate change, evolution, and the possibilities of multiple universes where, like the beating of a butterfly's wings, our each action positively or negatively impacts the world of universes. Our faith needs to be responsive to the real needs of our planet and every creature upon it and in it. There is an epiphany awaiting the world around us, awaiting us as we allow our faith to evolve with the already existing knowledge of our world, the needs of people, and the continuous lure of God that is speaking every bit as clearly in 2018 as it was when Moses stumbled over a bush that was alive with flame yet could not be consumed. We need to announce to the people that we know that a faith community exists not to moralize them, but to grow with them. We must announce that a faith community exists that is not afraid to embrace the fullness of healthy sexuality and that stands against physical and sexual abuse in any place and where we first believe the victim and not the victimizers. We must announce that a faith community exists that eats together and also feeds others with no questions asked. We must announce that a faith community exists that is not owned by any political persuasion, but that we are loyal to the ways of God alone. And we must announce that a faith community exists that is not afraid to acknowledge privilege and racism and sexism and that lives to help everyone thrive, especially those who believe differently than us, but who share in the holy desire to see everyone and everything treated fairly, justly, and with compassion and care. Next Sunday, we're going to start slowly again. A shared meal together after church. No faith demands will be made. No money required. What is wanted is to simply risk being together with a meal in which we all bring something and there discover the wealth of the universe that occurs when we give one to another and then go out and live more meaningful lives because we know we will come back here and be fed of a spirit that simply never ends. Now, on this Transfiguration Sunday, I do not know what thresholds we'll encounter when we follow the epiphany that will come into each of our lives. I don't know how God might invite us to change, to grow, to cross over. I don't know what losses and sorrows those crossings will include. But if this week's story bears witness to something true about the life of faith, it is then that we can trust in the one who invites us to cross over to a new and evolving faith journey. We can trust that resurrection, new life, awaits us on the other side of our decision to follow the ways of Jesus of Nazareth.